If people have things they want to say or ask about. You know the rules, the hard questions over there and the easy questions over here. And as long as people kind of, you know, play by the rules, that'll be terrific. So Campbell's going to start by visiting this little man from South Australia. We've seen how plurality system works there, and we've seen how majority system works. We're going to now see a version of what is essentially a single transferable vote system.
Okay, there's some writing on the screen which is not that, it's interesting, but it's not vital. The main thing is the actual counting, which I'll start now. Still more words. Okay, there's the quota, there's the Droop quota. You've seen that one before. And here are the famous people, and those are all the ballots on the side, and you can see it's a preferential ballot. There are three people to be elected in the system, and these people, so only three can be successful. Now, you can't hear it, but those are the ballots gradually being counted. They're counting the first preferences, and you can see the various heaps.
That's an Australian word for pile.
Okay, so they say we initially distribute the first preferences. And there they've got the quota again. And they show where that line is. They say all of suburbia's 20,000 votes have voted correctly. No informal votes. They've no votes. They're doing the little sums there.
Informal vote. Now, that's an Australian term for spoiled ballot.
Informal. They're doing their sums again. They're doing their sums, showing how to do it. There's the quota. 5,001 is the quota. So, one person's elected because she's got more than the quota. So, this is where the question was asked about what you do with a surplus. And in South Australia, they don't take that random number and just count the second preferences on that. They count them all. And they say, let's redistribute Mary Jones' surplus votes, but which 999 should we take? The ones that happen to be on the top? No. What makes them so special? What if they're quite different from the other 5,001? So they count all of them. We'll skip over the words. Then they show you how to work out a transfer value, which is perhaps something you can learn to do for a party trick or something. But it's the graphic that shows you what happens. Now, you see, those are the full votes. That's the full votes, all of them. All those preferences are being allocated.
See,
but
no transfers went here, right?
There
no second preferences from Mary went to...
That's right. She was obviously no one second preference, yeah. But that heap of votes, of course, is multiplied by the transfer value, and it gets much smaller. And so it's only the equivalent of the transfer value that's actually transferred. That's right. Okay. Who has been elected the second one? That's right. It says so. So now we redistribute Bruno's preferences, or Bruno's surplus. Again, now this time they're quite small because not the votes will be small, but the transfer value will be quite small because there's only a small surplus. Again, showing you how to work out the transfer value. 0.047, so it's not going to count too much. Again, his preferences only go to two candidates.
Unpopular.
Yes. And again, you multiply them by the transfer value and they shrink to almost nothing at all. So now we've finished with the surpluses. Now the big question, Has anyone reached the quota? No, 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 I say. Correct. So then, half of them, that lot go to the bloke in green, and the other lot for the guy in the waistcoat. Now, they're transferred at full value because people who are excluded haven't contributed to the election of any candidate yet. So they're counted at full value. Who has been elected to the third position? Well, it's the guy with the waistcoat. Okay, so McPhee's left lamenting. Okay, so that's the process, and it's maybe never quite as neat as that. The example of Meath will show you how the preferences are spread around more. Of course, it doesn't have a transfer value, but it's the same principle. Okay, now I'm going to go to the Irish one, and I think Ken should probably narrate this because this is his neck of the woods. Again, why it's polar bears, I don't know. And actually, what you click on is not particularly obvious. It's actually hidden just here.
Okay, this is I can't read it. It's Carlow, Kilkenny. Carlow and Kilkenny are both two counties in Ireland, and they've been combined to make a four-seat constituency. You see up there somewhere it says it's four people to be elected. So the district magnitude is four.
Is this example okay? Do you want me to shift for another one, or is that okay?
This one will work, okay. I think. Yeah. Well, we'll find out. And there are three. The colors indicate the particular candidates. Light blue is Fianna Fáil, roughly translated as Soldiers of Destiny. Now, there's a name for a political party. Purple is Fine Gael, kind of Children of Ireland or something, a little more prosaic. The green, I think, is the Green Party. The red are Labour Party. I don't know who this is. These are independents. And you can see the different parties have made different calculations as to how many candidates they should nominate. Fianna Fáil has nominated three because they think they have a good chance of getting at least two elected. They only nominated two. They'd probably get those two, but they might not accumulate all enough votes. Fine Gael thinks that, you know, they're probably only going to get one in this district. Historically, they've had one. You nominate three candidates, your votes might get spread out all over, and you might not be able to collect them. So they're going to nominate two. Labour hopes to win one seat. That's historically what they've had in this riding. And you can see the first preference over here on the right, the distributions on this count. So that's the first count. You can see, actually, that this candidate here, I can't read the name. Elmer, I think, it looks like he's met the quota. It will depend on the size of the quota. In Ireland, if there's only a few there and it's not going to make enough difference here, they'll say, well, why bother with the surplus at this stage of the game? We took all his surplus votes and gave it to this candidate here. It still isn't going to help Nolan. So let's just get on with it. Let's just get rid of Nolan.
Here we go.
So the next count will eliminate Mr. Nolan.
And that's made almost no difference, has it?
And you can hardly see the difference. There's a little bit added here. A few votes have been transferred. He didn't have many. So now we've eliminated Mr. Collins. You can see some of his votes have gone here to the green, and some of them have gone to this Fianna Fáil candidate. None are going here because if there's a second preference for this candidate, they just move on to the ballot to the third preference. He's already got enough votes. He doesn't need any more. He's met the quota. Okay, so now...
You want the next one?
Let's go to the next count. And you can see this candidate's eliminated, and most of his votes transfer to the green candidate and to the second Fianna Fáil candidate. But, you know, a few around. So people are exercising their preferences, and somebody likes almost everybody, but most of them are going here or here. The next candidate that's going to be eliminated, well, it depends. If that surplus is bigger than this difference, that surplus may get eliminated. I'm not sure what we don't. I can't read the numbers.
No, it's the next one is the.
Okay, so the Labour candidate gets eliminated because almost all the votes stay in the Labour Party. They go to the other Labour candidate. But a few don't. Some go to the Fine Gael candidate, some over to the Fianna Fáil candidate, some of the Green, and they may be neighbours, people who live in that candidate's part of the constituency or that they have some connection to, or that other candidate has been a second preference. Now, all these are not necessarily second preferences because some of them may be third preferences. They may have started here or started here and worked their way up. So now we're at the stage where a Fine Gael candidate is going to be elected, eliminated.
Okay, shall I knock him off?
Let's knock him off. Whoa! You can see that most of his votes stayed with his party running mate, but some of them went to the other Labour candidate, and some went to the Green candidate. A few even went to this other Fianna Fáil candidate. And again, those will depend on kind of personal loyalties and attachments. So there's still a fair amount of party voting going on, but voters are free to choose, and they're free to choose amongst the candidates. When this man was eliminated, most of them went to his running mate. The ones that went to Fianna Fáil didn't go evenly to Fianna Fáil. There was obviously a kind of preference to this candidate here. In the Irish case, this candidate probably came from the same part of the constituency. So they were probably neighbors or something like that. There's a lot of that kind of voting. Okay, now we have a second candidate elected. So now two elected. What count are we on, Campbell?
We're on six of eight.
Counts. And now this is a candidate with the fewest votes. So you can see these are first preference votes. These are probably second, third, fourth, or other order preference votes. So all the votes in this pile represent different preference levels. They may be the second preferences of this candidate. They may be the third preferences of a Labour candidate. But they've all kind of accumulated up. But now it's time for him to go with all his preferences. And you look at the ballot paper for which preferences those are, and then what happens? Oh, we must have transferred a surplus. So the difference between these two must have been smaller than that surplus. So in fact, that surplus now got transferred. And you do that because if these two were that close, you want to make sure you're eliminating the right person. So it looks like we're going to eliminate him now, surely.
Okay, shall I knock him off this one? This is 7 of 8, right, boom.
Oh, okay, so he's gone. You can see most of his votes go to this candidate, but a couple of others go here. None go here and none go there because those candidates have already been elected. And so you can see that, in fact, when the Green candidate's eliminated, there's about half of them go to the Labour candidate, but the other half go to Fianna Fáil candidates, split half and half. So people are exercising their preference to which candidate of which party they want to give their next preference to. And so we now have one candidate, two candidates, three candidates, four candidates, five candidates left, only four to be elected. Two of them have met the quota. These two are now going to be elected without meeting the quota. They're elected without meeting the quota because in this process, a number of people have not exercised subsequent preferences, and so there aren't enough to go around. If you had to vote for every candidate or the exact number of candidates, there would have been preferences. But some of these people maybe didn't have a second preference, and so their ballots just fell out. You saw that in the case of me.
You can see the logic of the Australian system, can't you, Ken?
Well, the Australians will get everybody to the quota because they make everybody vote innumerable times. If you don't make people express preferences they don't have, it may well be that some will be elected at the very end, the last candidate, without meeting the quota, but that candidate will have more support than the final candidate. And the great thing about this site is there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 general elections with dozens of constituencies. So you can see hundreds of versions of other. You can see what it looks like in a 5-member or a 4-member or 3-member district. But that's basically the process. And this allows you to kind of see how different preferences from different parties accumulate behind individual candidates to finally come to some kind of final verdict. So that's essentially a different representation of that process. And you would have had it earlier, but the machine didn't work. This screen seems to be working again, too, a bit.
It was just me, I think.
Well, the screen isn't quite as well as that screen. Anyway, we've got a little bit of time. If people have comments, observations, questions about the wide range of things we covered today, this might be a good time. And as I say, they don't need to be just questions. If people have things they want to, observations they want to make to share.
I've got two questions that were handed to me, and they're both to you. The first one is, how many members are needed to form a registered political party in BC?
My understanding is that parties don't have to actually have any members, right? They have to have a president and an official agent and a couple of officers, and then you can just kind of sign up. In fact, it's a very permissive system here that provides for the registration of political parties. The national level in this country, there are different kinds of rules, and they have to do with around the electoral process. You have to be able to nominate a certain number of candidates. But there's really virtually no constraints on forming a party in British Columbia under the current law.
These questions were given to me by Fritz Sens. Second one is, what percentage of the population are members of political parties?
That varies enormously in this country, more in this country than anywhere else almost in the democratic world. We have parties that are extremely permeable. People kind of come and go. They join at election time to participate in nomination meetings, perhaps to vote for a leadership candidate in a leadership selection, and then they kind of drop out. They let their memberships lapse till the next round of electoral processes. So we have this kind of yo-yo-like membership pattern. Most countries, people join political parties and they maintain memberships year in, year out in a much more regular kind of organized fashion. Best estimates are that in any given year, between 3 and 5% of the population of Canada belongs to a political party. But the membership numbers vary enormously. Some parts of the country, they have rules that once you get your name on the list, you actually can't get it off. I think if you ever become a member of the New Brunswick Liberal Party, you're there till long after you've gone to other places. They don't purge their list. The Nova Scotia Liberal Party has a very kind of limited kind of membership. So there's enormous variation in this country. Membership in political parties in Canada is at the low end of the democratic world. In the most participatory societies, they tend to be the Scandinavian ones. Memberships have reached as high as 15-20% of the population. But like voting turnout in most of the Western world, we talked about, and Andre talked about this, how turnout at the polls has been dropping really precipitously since the early 1990s. The same thing's true for political party membership. Political party memberships in the last 15 years or so have been in real crisis, and virtually all countries have been in decline in a kind of parallel way to voter turnouts. So the political parties are not the most popular organizations today, but the relative percentages by country are falling in the same kind of way. I think the only major Western democracy that regularly has lower party membership numbers is a big federal state, in the southern hemisphere. Looks like a kind of big island with a little island on the bottom. And it's often red on the world maps. Starts with an A. Anyway. Oh! I didn't say that.
Okay, that's the end of my questions. Right, other questions?
Shawnee, I see her.
I have two questions. First of all, the comment was made earlier today. Ken, you said in closed lists there's greater women and minorities. What about in open lists? Is it greater than a plurality system, or is it not?
I would say greater possibilities, because it's possible then for people controlling the list to provide for that if they so choose. There's a term that's often used. It's called zipping. I guess the image is of a zipper, that a political party might decide that it wants equal numbers. And if a couple of people in the center of a political organization control a list, they can say, we're going to make the list one man, one woman, one man, one woman, kind of like the image of a zipper, and they can provide for that. Once you get into open lists, you can still make lists like that, but you can't guarantee that the voters will respond so well. So that if you want to provide for a system which allows political parties to kind of manipulate the kinds of people, by gender or by language, by religion, by whatever are the divisions in a society, then you want to have, the more closed lists there are, the easier it is for party elites and bosses to control that process and produce those kind of outcomes. Because if they know that, you know, they normally get 20% of the vote, you know, it varies a little bit, so that they know if there's 100 people to be elected, they're going to get their top 20 on their list. You know, that's, PR systems tend to work that way. They're fairly predictable, fairly stable. So parties know pretty well how many seats they're going to get before the election, because they're not dramatic swings in proportional systems. And so they can say, okay, well, we know we're going to get between 18 and 22 people elected, because we always do, we have since the beginning. And they can say, well, we want three of these and four of those and whatever, and they can just arrange the list that way. If the list was open, they could still do it, but they couldn't guarantee that the voters might respond in ways that would produce that.
Thank you. And my second question was, Campbell, you said there is no guarantee of safe seats in PRSTV, unlike in list systems. And with that, is it safe seats would only be the closed list, right? Or would there, can there be safe seats in an open list as well?
It depends how open it is. I assume that if you're, well, Ken, what about the Finnish system? If you're on top of their list, I suppose it's just a question of the odds, isn't it? Whether you're preferred more.
Yes, and they obviously put their prominent, leading, well-known figures near the top of the list where people can see them and voters tend to respond, but they have the option of going elsewhere.
But even that system, you're still dependent on the party as a whole getting enough votes to elect that person on that list in the first place, whereas STV, it really is up to you. So as Ken pointed out, for even the Finnish system, you're dependent on other people voting for other candidates as well, so that you've got enough votes to elect a representative of that party.
We just saw, for instance, on this little visual about Carlo Kilkenny, where the one Labour Party candidate got elected at the end. They nominated two, because they needed two candidates to... One of them ran in Carlo, and one of them ran in Kilkenny. I don't know that for a fact, but I would bet my house on it. So they could get the Labour votes out of Carlo and the Labour votes out of Kilkenny. But those two Labour candidates knew that only one of them was going to get elected. They knew one would. They were dead sure, because history had shown that there was enough Labour votes in Carlo Kilkenny to return one Labour member, and proportionality would guarantee that. It's the point of proportionality. What it doesn't tell them is which one it's going to be. So, sure, they're competing against Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil to try and get their vote up, but deep in their hearts, they know the person they really got to beat if they want to get elected is their running mate, because only one of them is probably going to make it. So there's two kinds of competition going on. The parties are competing against one another, and the candidates are too, but they're also kind of competing against their running mates. And the way they do that is, of course, try to build up a lot of personal support among voters by servicing their constituents and being right there and responding to voters and building up that kind of personal connection. So it's in that sense there aren't safe seats. There may be a safe seat for the Labour Party in Carlo Kilkenny. There's not a safe seat for any one politician.
The same in Tasmania. The interesting thing about Tasmania, say, in the last 30, 40 years, is that the vote share of the parties hasn't varied very much, but there's been quite high turnover. So I did a comparative study some years ago, and the turnover in Tasmania of individual members is about twice the Australian average for compared with lower houses, single-member districts. So what it means is people can still vote for the same party but throw out members they don't like.
Frederick.
Thank you. My question is for Ken. It's about the second-tier seats in the PR list system. Is it more proportional or less proportional if the number of the second-tier seats is large?
I guess it would depend on which formulas are being used at which level. Sometimes they use the more proportional system at the first tier, and they use and a less proportional system at a second tier. But as a general rule, the larger the district magnitudes, the second tier systems tend to be kind of for the country as a whole or larger areas. As a general rule, larger district magnitudes are going to produce more proportionality. So that on balance, and the point of having a second tier is probably to provide for an extra dose of proportionality in case it doesn't work out in individual districts. And so by extension, the logic suggests that if there are more of those or they're in larger districts, that would produce more proportionality. But we're really talking about probably kind of small differences on the margins, the things that will make a difference to the smallest parties of a magnitude of one or two or three seats. I mean, that's where we're really working on the margins of difference. And a little bit more proportion or a little bit less, but those are really kind of minor, I think.
There's a question over on the right here. Yes.
Thanks. I'm at one point during the day, and I'm not sure when it was, I heard someone say that the magic number for district magnitude is 5. And I'm just wondering, looking at some of the systems in your sort of slideshow, there's a few areas where the district magnitude is 2 or, you know, 3. I'm just wondering what the point is then, if they're not going to be that proportional, why they would have it set up with only that many candidates or
You're right, Jill. For instance, in Spain, the district magnitude has run from 1 to 33. And what that really means is there's some historical corner where they just are 1, you know, for idiosyncratic reasons. The average is still 7 or 8 or 6 or whatever it is. And they have some quite large ones and they have some quite small ones. And they've decided, well, they can live with 1 or 2. And then they're not going to be proportional. It's the system as a whole that's going to end up being relatively proportional. But you're quite right, and that's an important observation, that any one little corner of it might not be. And that's true for lots of these kinds of systems where you have this varying district magnitude. In areas where it's bigger, you're going to get more proportional results. Areas where it's smaller, you're going to have less. And if it could be big enough overall, that the overall system will be more proportional in terms of the kind of the bottom line.
Okay.
You're quite right.
Okay, just what you're asking is there a number where proportionality kicks in? We were talking about this just before this session. If you only have 2 members and you use a droop quota, that's the proportion of votes is a third. So that's not very proportional. In fact, if there are 2 large parties with 40% of the vote, say, it means it's, even though there's another party with 20% of the vote, it's never going to get representation. 3, it improves a bit. 4, it may or may not. 5, it starts to get pretty proportional. At 7, it takes off like a rocket. Okay. So what I was mentioning, there are really 2 things. There's the size, there's a district magnitude, and there's also the pattern of party competition. So you get different indices of proportionality depending on whether you've got 2 big parties and 1 or 2 small ones, or lots of small ones, or 1 big one and lots of small ones. So once you get above 5, then almost any combination will be reasonably proportional. But for any given set of parties, the proportionality varies up and goes up and down in the low numbers. So if you're keen on proportionality, then you want a number 5 or more. If you don't mind a fair amount of distortion, but you still want some proportionality, then something between 3 and 5 is okay. And if you basically pulling a Swifty and you don't care how proportional it is, then you have 2. You say in 2 big parties, you might as well have single member districts. So because a district magnitude of 2 just doesn't make any difference.
RB?
I want to get back to this tier systems, 2-tier system, 3-tier systems. Could you give us a practical example of a 3-tier system, how it really works, assuming, for an example, the legislature has 100 MLAs or MPs. So could you describe how it really works and how we end up with the 100 MLAs?
Well, I won't hand all it to Ken initially, but basically imagine that you have those 100 members. Maybe 70 of them are assigned by region, maybe 10 lots of 7 member districts. Then maybe you have a national list. Did I say 70? I did, didn't I? Then a national list which might have 20, and that, so you would then have district magnitude of 20. And then you might have a third tier, which was corrective. Sorry, a national tier of 20. That's right, so adding 90. You then have a third tier, of 10. And the only purpose of that would be to, say, aggregate the preferences for small parties that hadn't been represented in either of the other two tiers. So it's a, I mean, the simple solution would be to have a national list like Israel or Netherlands, where the threshold is pretty small. But where there are strong regional connections, then there is this harmonization process going on. So you have regional lists to cater to regional concerns, national lists where there are national concerns, and then perhaps a little top-up to make sure it's really proportional for small parties.
But how do we really transfer votes to those seats?
You go through exactly the same process that you do for that Ken describes. You have one formula for the local, one formula can be the same or a different formula for the national, and you can have yet another formula or some other top-up formula for the third. So they're all you can do it any way you like.
So the selection for the second-tier level is based on the proportion of votes at national level?
Yep.
For the different parties?
Yep. All can be the same votes counted yet a different way, or it can be a different set of votes.
You could, for instance, have, let's say that there was a certain number of votes for parties that didn't work towards electing any candidate, and they in each region, a small party would have a few votes here and a few votes there. You could kind of, that hadn't elected anybody, you could then just transfer them all to the next level and use them at that stage. That's what essentially the Czechs do. Or you could have a system in which at the second tier, there was just an attempt to provide for kind of proportionality at the wider level. So you can use the tiers for different purposes as well, either to kind of soak up unused votes or to provide for more proportionality, or simply as a whole separate kind of supplementary set of calculations. That's what happens, I think, now in Poland.
I've got on those tier, Douglas and then Julie. Douglas?
Campbell, I'm looking at one of the slides from your presentation this afternoon. It's on evaluation and the impact on the operation of government. I just want clarification to help myself start to evaluate myself how this system works. The one thing I'm not clear on yet is your rating of good is on democratic parties. I still don't understand what you're meaning by that evaluation based on democratic parties. Could you clarify that, please?
Well, it's really Ken's fault. It's his heading. As I explained, it's a question of how permeable the parties have to be to public choice. So, for example, and if you make the criterion how much control do people have over party selection of candidates, then, of course, STV does very well because it's the voters that choose the candidates. But on the other, there are many other ways of making parties democratic. For example, rather perversely in some way, you can make the party members choose. You can have compulsory ways of parties choosing their candidates, or you can have leadership conventions. You can do all those kind of things, or you can let the parties. Party members choose these things. Now, Ken has made his career on looking at different ways of parties organizing themselves, so he should really answer that question. Now, what is a democratic party, Ken?
Well, Ken, I just want to clarify my question. So we're looking at evaluation. On the impact of the operation of government, the PRSTV system says democratic parties, it does a good job of having democratic parties. What are you referring to by a democratic party?
Well, I have to tell you that was his evaluation.
But, I just want to make sure we know where we're talking about, whether it be good, moderate, or poor.
But I think what we're really talking about is what kind of parties they are, and we're talking about how open they are to their members, how centralized they might be, how bureaucratized they might be. And, of course, one person who thinks a highly bureaucratized, centralized party is a good thing would be, for someone else, not such a good thing. Parties under STV tend to be more decentralized. They tend to be much more open to members. They tend to provide much more freedom to their local elected politicians because they have to be responsive to the voters in a much more open way. Those are parties, though, that are not likely to be as ideologically structured and coherent because the party or as organizations don't have the capacity to impose a kind of coherence and structure and discipline. STV is likely to, like all PR systems, probably produce somewhat more parties, but unlike other kinds of PR systems, produce rather less ideological approaches to politics. But again, in some sense, that depends on the kind of societies. I mean, Malta is a country that uses STV, and it is a very rigidly divided society in which people vote extremely rigidly between a Labour Party and a Catholic Party. The lines are rigid and tightly drawn. In terms of voters' behaviors, it might as well almost be a kind of party list kind of arrangement because people vote very, dare I say it, religiously down the party tickets. Those parties are more disciplined, but that comes out not just of the electoral system, but the wider society.
I should say that all those things on the evaluation, as with the strengths and weaknesses, are there more to raise the issue than actually to whether it's a plus or a minus. I mean, as certainly on the STV list, as I mentioned, some of the strengths can be regarded as weaknesses and vice versa. It's a matter of how you view them. Okay, I've got Julie on my list and then Rob. Julie.
The question I have is going back to the PR system, and I think that, RB, your question that you had about the tiers, is that with regard to the PR? I was just having a bit of a difficult time getting my head around the tiers, and at first I wasn't understanding, and then I thought I understood, and now I'm not so sure I understand. When they're talking about the threshold being 4% national or 12% in the district, they're talking, though, about one election, right? Okay, we're not talking about a national election versus a provincial election or anything like that. So is this a quasi-mixed system?
Well, I suppose it is in a way.
It's a kind of mix, and we'll talk a little bit about that tomorrow, because when you apply very different formula and very different criteria at different levels, you are mixing up almost different principles. And it is a kind of modest version of a mixed system, I guess. Basically, what is the example you're probably referring to are the Swedes, where they have a series of what they would call regional areas. You know, if you were to imagine British Columbia, maybe the Vancouver Island, the Lower Mainland, the Southern Interior, the Okanagan, the Northern Interior, and so on, would be identifiable regions, and they would have a different district magnitude depending on how many people they had in them. And you might say that you wanted 80% of your seats to be assigned to all these regional districts, but you wanted to save 20% of them for top-up purposes to make sure that the overall result would be more proportional. So the Swedes operate on the system that if you want to get any seats, you have to either pass the 4% national threshold or you've got to pass 12% in one of the regions. So that's really saying that a small party that's regionally oriented in Sweden has a chance, if they're strong in one area, if they can get at least 12% in one area, then they're entitled to some claim on the total pool of seats. And because a party might well get 12% in northern Sweden, but not get 4% overall nationally. So it's a way of allowing different kind of parties to get some purchase in the system.
So you're looking at, basically you're saying in an area, you're looking at a particular person.
You're looking at a list of candidates.
A list of candidates. So they look. Do they look first of all at the districts and then nationally, or they do it both at the same time?
They kind of do it at the same time, starting with the national figures, but then working out what they are in the particular regions for the calculation.
Okay.
But again, you could do it either way. I mean, either the virtue or the vice in the system is that you could kind of put these things together in any combination you like.
Okay, Rob.
Yeah, my question's kind of a follow-up to Doug's question and your answer to it. You were talking about Democratic parties, and you were indicating that depending on how – well, you were talking about the lists and how they put people on the list, the parties themselves, and the impression I got was that they sometimes determine how the parties put people forward. Is it within our mandate to even suggest something like that? I wasn't sure that we could actually raise that issue.
I thought you were going to ask a question that I was asked about why were there 6 members on the Liberal list for the Tasmanian ballot, even though there were 5 candidates and the party was only ever likely to get more than 3. So I'll answer that question even though you didn't ask it. But to answer to answer your major question first, this is where it's like electoral districts, like the number, size of the legislature. Clearly we assume that it's 79, but there may be implications of saying, well, if you want a system that does X, then we can do it with 79, but it might work better with more. But on the other hand, 79 is what we've got. That's what we can be sure of. So if, for example, the structure of the party list was felt to be a critical component of the electoral system, or is a component of the electoral system that the Assembly wants to investigate, then it might be appropriate to mention that the list shall be comprised of X people and whatever. But that's kind of on the edge of what the Assembly really should look at. But to answer the question I really wanted to answer was that in Tasmania, when you're building your list, you want to draw people into your party list. And there are also no by-elections, so you need the odd spare. But quite apart from that, as Ken suggested with Ireland, you want people from different regions within the electoral district. You want people, maybe you want a sports person who's well known. You maybe have someone who's a national broadcaster. So the parties work on the assumption that if you put well-known people on the list, you will draw people onto your party list, and then those votes will flow to the party. Other party candidates, even though only 2 or 3 might win.
Like, honest, as a follow-up to that, though, would we be allowed to say that you have to have so many people from this particular region? You get what I'm saying?
Well, again, that's as they say, hypothetical. But yes, if you want a tier system, then in effect, that's what you're saying. If you say, well, we're going to elect so many, we have a list system, and it's going to be broken up into these regions, and that, in fact, you're setting the geography or you're setting the structure within which the parties have to accommodate these rules. So, Alan, and then Fred, then we better stop.
Hello. How reproducible are the results of an STV election? The chronic manipulation of the fifth place choices of the fifth place voters, going back to back on recount.
If you deal with a transfer value, they are exactly reproducible, because the ballots are there and you can count them, and the calculations are arithmetically complicated but basically crude. I mean, they're just simply multiplication and division and subtraction and addition. So there's no great problem. There is a big literature on transfer values, but it's got nothing to do with its reproducibility. It's got to do with the 10th decimal point of fairness. If it's a random selection under STV, then it may not be reproducible. And that's why in Australia the Senate moved from this random process to a transfer value, because it was felt that for one election in 10, a different candidate would be elected if a different sample of votes had been used for the transfer of the surplus. But if it's a transfer value, it's exactly reproducible. And finally, Fred.
Yes, my question is a very simple one. Would our mandate allow this assembly to recommend a reduction of constituencies?
Well, it all depends on whether it's a necessary part of the electoral system that's suggested.
I understand that, but say, for example, we recommended a PR system of some sort, we would pretty well have to have a multi-candidate constituency, and so would it be within our mandate to make those recommendations? Rather than going up, we would be going down, and that way we would get this multiple-member constituency.
I'm not sure quite why it follows that it would go down. Why would it go down?
The number of constituencies would go down. That's right, Fred.
Aha, you're talking about the number of electoral districts. So the number of members would be the same. Okay, the number of members is fine. That's the deciding characteristic. It doesn't matter how many electoral districts. We could have, as Ken's fond of saying, no electoral districts or one huge one. So the certainly within the choice of the Assembly to choose any number of electoral districts between 1 and 79.
Thank you.
And Campbell says if you want some fairly detailed STV literature for bedtime reading, he's got it. Thank you very much, Campbell. Ken, for wrap up. Okay. A couple of, yes, Douglas.
I want to know if anybody's going to be going to the hockey game tonight, if we could just briefly meet just after we leave here.
Just outside here, Douglas, okay? Anybody who wants to go to the hockey game? I got a few other light kind of announcements. Richard Hall, of course, practice for the barbershop version of O Canada after dinner in the concourse. The brainstorming session about outreach to students and teachers, again, after dinner at the concourse with Susanna and Marilyn. And to remind you, the draw for members who will serve on the selection committee for a presentation to the Assembly will be done tomorrow morning, so you've got... After you leave this hall, if you still want to do it, the box is at the help desk. You know the dinner is at 6. It's a great evening for walking, and Leo has a final announcement to make.
Yeah, we've done some work with all the various requests that came in today, so I've gotten around to some of you, but some of you that I need to see or to pass a new letter to are Art, Beaumont, David Wills, George Boucher, Sean Ray, Linda Dory, Harley Nyan, Craig Henschel, I think it is, Corey Thiessen, and Ann, gave Ann one, but I have, must be two Anns here then, isn't there? Okay, and Heidi, and Ann Rushlow. So I have various letters, and then after we did this, I got cornered by three people, Mo, Carrie Lang, and that allowed me to do another change for Ian. So if all of you want to see me before you leave, I'll just give you this information. Thank you.
Campbell's got one more announcement. It's the literature.
No, it's not the literature, but I'm willing to, if you want to see me about that. It's just there was a group that didn't see the animation. So once we've broken up, once the rest of you can disappear, I'll run the animation once more for the group that didn't see it.
See you at dinner. Thank you.